let's say that you're writing a vivid vision for your business. Mm-hmm. The first step is you got to get out of your box. You can't sit in your office and write this thing because you get distracted by how. Mm-hmm. Right? You get distracted, and you get distracted by who as well. Mm-hmm. You need to get away from your laptop. No technology, no iPhone, no iPad, no nothing. You take a good old-fashioned notepad and a couple of pens in case one runs out. You put your earbuds in and you go somewhere where you're inspired, somewhere around nature. Mm-hmm. You go near the ocean. You hang out in the mountains. I start doing a mind map. And I mind map my company almost as if I hopped into a time machine. And we travel out to December 31st, 2023. Yeah. And we get out of the time machine and we look around and we're like, shit, I'm in my company. And then you describe what you see.
Yes.
You don't know how it happened in 3 years. You just describe it in its finished state.
Yeah.
So I want you to describe every area of your org chart. Describe operations, describe IT, describe finance, describe marketing.
Imagine if everyone you worked with could read your mind. They could see as clearly as you see where you want your marketing business to be going and how you want it operating. You're now able to listen in as a special guest who was named by Forbes magazine as the CEO Whisperer, Cameron Harold, as he joins Dean to discuss how to create a vision worth sharing, one of the most effective ways to align your marketing and business around a vision of the future. Cameron is the mastermind behind hundreds of companies' exponential growth and has earned his reputation as the business growth guru. He has built a dynamic consultancy with clients that include a monarchy and a big four wireless company. He's the author of 5 books. Cameron is also a top-rated international speaker and the founder of the COO Alliance, the world's leading network for seconds in command. Now, everyone, I love marketing. Please join me in welcoming Dean Jackson and Cameron Harold.
Wow. So where you're sitting in right now? You're in Canada, you're in BC.
I'm in Vancouver. Yeah, this is the view that I have here.
Well, I am excited that you're here. I mean, this is, I said to Eunice when we were thinking about having guests for starting out the beginning of the year. And, you know, you were the top one on my mind here because for a number of reasons. Number one, the beginning of the year seems like everybody's eye is on, if they haven't already done it, their vision for for the coming year. And I love this concept of your vivid vision. And what I think is even more important about this right now is as the popularity of who, not how, is really taking off as an idea, the distinction in how people are going to be successful at applying who, not how, is their ability to articulate what it is they want the who to do. And I think that's going to be an important skill. So that's kind of the two things that I want to kind of kick off the conversation about.
Yeah, sounds great. I was just coaching a client this morning and we were talking a little bit about some of the direction of the organization and aligning of people. And I said that one of the biggest reasons to even have a vivid vision, which we'll go into and explain what it even is, but mm-hmm. so that everybody sees value in their work. Right. Mm-hmm. Because it's really hard for people to understand if they're just working hard in a business area, how does that work? Like what's it really building? What's it making happen? And if they understand the full vision behind something, there's more meaning. And I told them the story of these three bricklayers. You know, they're over in Barcelona in Spain 100 years ago. And they asked the first bricklayer, what are you doing? He said, I'm making bricks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's making bricks and he's very efficient making bricks. He's not really happy. He's just making bricks. And they asked the second guy, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm building a wall and I get to make bricks to build a wall. So he's got some meaning in his work and he's, you know, a little bit happier, but he's still making bricks to build a wall. And they asked the third guy and they're all sitting beside each other. And they asked the third guy, what are you doing? He said, we're building the Sagrada Familia, this incredible cathedral. And it's going to take us 100 years to build, but I can see what it's going to look like. And I get to build the bricks to make the left wall of the cathedral. Mm. And you think about who has more meaning in their day to day.
Yeah.
At the most minute kind of frontline, meaningless, minimum wage job, it's mm-hmm. the person that sees the bigger picture of what we're building. And so often as entrepreneurs, we just don't explain the whole picture to everybody. We explain the top line idea and we expect them mm-hmm. to read our mind.
Mm-hmm. I love the example that you gave at one of the Genius Network annual events, where you were describing the idea of a picnic specifically, and sure, how as a great illustration of a vivid vision compared to just telling somebody the top line of something.
Well, and that was, so we can even do that right now. If we just did a quick show of hands, if we had people put their hands up really quickly.
Okay.
Has anyone here seen the movie The Sound of Music? Just put your hands up if you've seen the movie The Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. Right. So almost everybody. Now, there's a very famous scene in the movie The Sound of Music where they're having a picnic. Right. But who has never seen the movie The Sound of Music? Jeremy, Colin, like, who has no idea what the movie The Sound of Music's about?
I am Campbell, too young.
Colin, you got no idea?
I have no idea.
Colin, can I pick on you for a second? Just tease you a little bit. Can Colin go off mute?
Yeah, he can unmute. Yeah, there we go. Right.
So, Colin, there's a very, very famous scene in the movie The Sound of Music. You're not allowed to Google it right now. Okay. And they're having a picnic. And I need you to organize a picnic for the Genius Network. And I need you to make it look and feel like the one in The Sound of Music. So should our picnic be in the mountains or at a park or at a lake?
Let me get back to you on that one.
Well, just pick. In your mind, where should we have it? At the mountains, at a lake, or in a park?
A lake.
Okay, great. So the picnic is going to be at a lake, just like The Sound of Music. Perfect. And then should we get the food at a grocery store? Should we buy it at a hut at the lake, like with a little food stand? Or should we bring the food in a picnic basket?
The hut, for sure.
Okay, we're going to buy the food at the hut at the lake. Perfect. Just like The Sound of Music. Everyone who's seen the movie knows that this is perfectly online. And then the next thing is, Colin, we're going to bring kids to the picnic with us. Should the kids be playing baseball, dancing, or playing croquet?
Just like The Sound of Music?
Yeah.
Croquet.
Croquet, perfect. So just what's amazing is, just like the movie The Sound of Music, we're going to have kids dancing and playing croquet at a lake. Well, in fact, the picnic at The Sound of Music, where's Patty Ann? Patty Ann, can you go off mute for a second?
Sure.
Patty Ann, where is the picnic at The Sound of Music?
It's on a beautiful hill.
It's in the mountains, because the song is "The Hills Are Alive." Alps. They're up in the Austrian, Alps, right? They're in the Austrian Alps outside of Vienna. And Padian, where did they get the food? Did they buy it at a hut or a grocery store?
Actually, I thought they brought it with them.
They brought it in a picnic basket up into these Austrian Alps, Colin. You've completely fucked up our picnic. And Padian, the kids at the picnic, what were they doing? Were they playing croquet or baseball or...
No, they were dancing and singing with Julie Andrews.
They were dancing with Julie. It's one of the most famous scenes of the movie. But Colin, as smart as you are, you can't recreate the movie if you've never seen the movie. So
one star picnic service would not recommend.
Yeah. So the problem for most of us as entrepreneurs is our employees can't read our mind. They don't know what our business is going to look like in 3 years. They don't know what customer engagement is supposed to feel like. They don't know what marketing is supposed to, they don't know what our meeting rhythms are supposed to be like. They can't describe the office environment and the use of the technology. And we have it all in our head, and we get frustrated with them because they're not as intuitive. You know, Daryl Sutherland, as smart as you are as an entrepreneur, you're no more intuitive than your employees. But the reason you feel so intuitive is because you see the vision in your company clearer than they do. But if all of our employees could see exactly what we can see, they can then recreate our vision without ever asking us what we're building. So the example of this would be building a home. And let's say that, I'll just do this example, Dean, and then we'll come back to questions. But
if
we were building a home for a second, the homeowner is really the CEO of the project, right? The homeowner knows what they want the home to look like. They know how they want their friends to interact. They know where they want the kids to sleep. They have an idea of whether it's going to be four stories or one story or modern or craftsman style. And we meet with the contractor and we keep explaining it and talking about it and showing pictures and diagrams and sketches until the contractor can read our mind. and the contractor goes away with our vision and creates blueprints or plans to make our vision come true. And then we, the homeowner, sign off on the blueprints, they sign off on our vision, and they hand the blueprints to the employees, and the employees can build our home on budget, on time, exactly to spec, without ever speaking to us as the CEO. Mm-hmm. Imagine if your employees never had to speak to you because they were so clear on what you were building that they never had to ask you for more ideas, and they could then create the plans to make your vision come true. Mm.
Instead of people, I think the natural thing is that CEOs go, you know, build me a house and I want it to be great and make it 5,000 square feet and go, you know, we're in a hurry kind of thing, and not really give any more direction than that, and get frustrated when people come and ask questions. Bingo. Or get frustrated at the end when they build completely the wrong thing.
Yeah, I could have hired a contractor to build my home and given him $2 million and said, come back in 12 months.
Yeah.
And it would have looked nothing like what I wanted. And it could have been the most amazing home.
Yeah.
But it didn't. Why do we have 5 bedrooms? And why isn't the kitchen open? And why is there no views? Like, I don't understand. Well, because my vision wasn't clearly communicated. Even though they were the best employees, if they're not aligned with vision, then at best we're herding cats.
So where did you first start this? Where did you come up with the idea that this is a good thing?
So I actually got exposed to this idea back in 1998 in Vancouver. I was a part of the Entrepreneurs Organization, which was the first mastermind group I ever got involved in. And 120 entrepreneurs got invited to the lunch, and only 16 of us showed up. And we were meeting with a high-performance Olympic coach and sports psychologist. Mm-hmm. And he talked about looking into a crystal ball. And we thought this was the stupidest analogy we'd ever heard. We're like, God, this is going to be the biggest waste of our 2 hours. You know, it's going to be a day I'm never going to get back. And then he talked about how high-performance athletes would visualize themselves performing the event, and how they would literally picture themselves performing the event. And we've all seen the athletes, like a high jumper is the one that I always remember in the Olympics. And you can see them out at the edge of the track with their eyes closed. And they're kind of like, you kind of see them going up over their mind. Like they're literally in their mind going up over the bar. And they do it one or two times. And then they kind of open their eyes, they go back on their heels, and they run. And they're literally now recreating the vision that they've done thousands of times in their mind.
Yeah.
So that when they're performing, they perform completely on instinct. So he explained how athletes did it. Then we talked about how contractors did it. And then we understood if we could take this idea and bring it into the business world, our employees could actually recreate our goals as well. Brian is the one that really put it in place better than anybody, calling it a painted picture. He actually, and Brian, do you want to tell your story of how you took this idea and ran with it?
Sure. Hey, Cameron. Surprise. I know we were chatting the other day. Cameron and I are still best of buds. And so it's nice to see you in your home. And hey, Dean, I see you got a horse for sale.
I got a horse shell. For sale.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Maybe the quick painted picture story for me. So I was in a doom loop, as Jim Collins describes it. That meant some depression and just wondering what the heck was going on in my business and if I wanted to grow my business or if I even could. So 1997, 98, I'm at my parents' summer cottage. I was a part of EO. You had to have $1 million in revenue to get in. I got in, even though I didn't finish high school, didn't finish college. This was going to be my education, was EO. And I was in a doom loop because I thought, it took me 8 years to get to $1 million in revenue. I don't necessarily love the junk business, nothing sexy about it whatsoever. And I saw people in EO that had way bigger businesses. So I was comparing myself to others. I don't recommend you ever do that. It's not healthy. And so EO says, if you're trying to solve a creative problem, go somewhere that inspires you. I go to my parents' summer cottage. I sit on the water. I pull out literally one sheet of paper, double-sided. And I started talking to myself. I said, Brian, no more doom loop. Think of pure possibility. You're an optimistic, happy person. What could the future look like if only you could imagine it? So very Jerry Maguire-ish, but I started to feverishly write this one page and I never changed a word. And it started with, we will be in the top 30 metros in North America by the end of 2003, 5 years out. We would be the FedEx of junk removal, clean, shiny trucks, friendly, uniform drivers. we would be on the Oprah Winfrey show. I described in vivid color what the business would look like. And as I started to reread my painted picture, it was just I looked at this and I'm like, I inspired myself. I could see pure possibility. I got jazzed and excited. I got goosebumps. And I said, okay, I can see this. No more doom loop. But I didn't know how to make it happen. So fast forward a little bit, I started sharing it with people around me, people like Cameron. We sat on the back deck of my house at the time and had a couple of Boddingtons, some beer. And I remember, you know, Cameron and others said, you're on crack. You're smoking some hope dope here. You're not going to get on Oprah and have top 30 metros. And a lot of advisors said it can't be done. But the magic was Cameron and I in 1998, 99, we start working together. I bring him in. We were in the same EO forum. And I said, I can see the vision. He read it and felt it. Others could read it and wanted to be a part of it. And Cameron's role became reverse engineering. He became the implementer. He became the guy who said, okay, let's make this happen. And Cameron took us from 2 million to 106 million. We hit the top 30 metros. We got on Oprah. We had shiny new trucks and became the FedEx of junk removal. And it all happened as if it was magic. I'm happy to put painted picture and a link to it in the chat just before I run. But Cameron used to say to me, I can't see visions. And I remember Cameron, I don't know if you remember this, but I lost you here, but I'm like, that's bullshit. I go, if you could go on a vacation anywhere in the world tomorrow, where would you go? What are you drinking? Who are you with? What does it look like? What's the weather like? We can all imagine where we would go if we were actually allowed to travel today somewhere in the world. And it's imagining that possibility. Cameron calls it the vivid vision, painted picture, vivid vision, whatever you see for your future, dream about it in full Technicolor, and then take that sheet of writing and share it with everybody around you. Because I think I heard Cameron when I first came on, if people don't know what the entrepreneur's thinking, they're gonna go in every direction trying to please you. But true leadership is having a vision, what it looks like, sharing it with the world, and those people are who are going to get you to greatness. So that's me kind of in a nutshell. Thanks for having me, Dean.
That is so
happy
great.
I'm happy to take questions out as well. Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I even changed the name from painted picture to vivid vision was I had a number of coaching clients that thought the painted picture was a vision board with lots of pictures on it. Mm-hmm. So I tried to create something that took away from the idea of it needing to be pictures, because it's okay to have a vision board for yourself, but a picture says 1,000 words and different people can interpret pictures differently. Mm. So it's the same concept, but what Brian's painted picture did, or the vivid vision, was we then shared that with potential employees like Michelle, who I got so excited about seeing the name. Michelle was one of our early stage franchise partners and joined partially because she read the vivid vision of the painted picture and liked what it was coming. Nobody in their right mind, Brian and I were talking a couple of days ago, no one in the first 10 or 15 franchisees, they must have been smoking dope, because if they only saw what we had at that day, they never would have bought. But they bought in because of the future vision, and it was so clear, they saw how they could be a part of that.
It's interesting too how a vision, you can take one little thing that you see and describe it in such detail to others that's all it needs to get someone excited. So a second business we went into, which we franchised, called Wow One Day Painting. We have 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Wow One Day Painting, and Shack Shine, which is windows, gutters, and so on. Wow One Day Painting, we go paint people's homes in a day. And I remember when I looked at acquiring the business after they painted my home in a day and I was so wowed, I started looking around and asking people, what do you think? And I went to people with painting experience, a guy, James Alish, who used to be a senior guy at College Pro like Cameron was back in the day. And I remember saying to him, what do you think? And he's like, you're freaking nuts. You're stupid. Don't do it. I listened to him, all the reasons why he said it wouldn't work. And I said, thanks. And I went and bought the business. Several years later, I shared a painted picture. I shared a vision with James. I shared our new branded logo. And James is like, oh my gosh, I'm in. And I said, in for what? He goes, you need somebody to run the business. I'm going to be your managing director. And I said, let's be clear. You thought I was freaking nuts. He goes, until I saw the vision and understood what it looked like, that made the difference. And James is with us today and phenomenal leader.
Well, even I sat with Brian on his back deck before reading his first painted picture and said, you can't franchise junk removal.
Yeah. Like
when we were sharing those Boddingtons, I remember where I was sitting on the back deck right by that old screen door.
Amazing.
It's so, you can't franchise. When you got to read the vision of what the future looked like, I'm like, no, now I can see it. I can help you make that come true. Like that can be done. I get that.
Mm. Totally.
You know, it reminds me because it goes all the way back to think and grow rich, conceive and believe and achieve. And conceiving is that's the thinking of it. If you can imagine it, you can't achieve something you can't imagine. That's where it's all got to start.
I was speaking yesterday with a coach or a CEO that I coached, and I coached him, his COO, and his four directors for 4 years. Mm-hmm. His name is Ben Kirshner from Elite SEM. It's now called Tinuity. And they just sold the company for the second time, and 25 of their employees are now millionaires in cash. And one of his visions was to make his leadership team all millionaires. And I was crying talking to him over Zoom yesterday because I was so excited for that part of this vision that we'd worked so hard for 4 years came to fruition. But it's because everyone is all focused on that same goal.
Yeah.
Cameron and I had this, can you imagine wall, this massive wall in the office that was blank that we needed to do something with. So we created, we put up at the top, can you imagine, a big vinyl decal. And then we wanted people to put their name and a goal of something they were going to make happen for the business. So I started with, can you imagine us being featured on the Oprah Winfrey Show?
Oh, first you had 100 franchise partners and we only had 20. And I was like, 100's a big fucking stretch. And then you asked me for something. And I said, how about our logo on the space shuttle? And you go, that's crazy. I'm like, well, what do you got? You go, how about featured? And then Brian goes, how about being featured on Oprah? I'm like, that's as crazy as our logo on the space shuttle. He goes, no. And he explained the episode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, yeah. And that's how it went on the wall was you had such a solid vision for what it would look like that it was easy to make that come true.
Yeah,
totally. And so we got one last comment real quick, and then I'm sorry I have to run for a company-wide meeting.
I'm so glad you could come.
Yeah, no, thank you. This is awesome. I wish I could hear from all of you. I feel strange just one way. But so can you imagine, Walt, we had this concept. We started ShackShine and we decided years ago, let's put up a can you imagine wall for ShackShine. We had our franchise partners put things up there. And one of the ones that I tried to lead with, again, leading with the Oprah one for 1-800-GOT-JUNK, is I said, could you imagine if Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, shined, you know, we shined Shaq's Shaq and we wrote it up.
Yeah,
so I forgot about that. And next week I'm interviewing Shaquille O'Neal, a fireside chat at our annual kickoff, which of course this year is virtual. Wow. And somebody sent me the picture of the Can You Imagine wall, one of the franchise partners, and said, you made that vision happen. And I said, I forgot about it, but it was planted in my mind. So my one sort of takeaway or leave behind, write everything down because you never know when magic will conspire to happen and off you go. So that's all the so best awesome. To all of you. If I can help you in any way, stay in touch.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks to all of you. Thanks, Cameron. We'll chat soon.
Hey, bud. Bye.
That's amazing. That's fun. That was good. I'm glad he was able to make that happen. It was perfect timing for what you were just talking about right there.
Well, I'll tell you, it was so building out the 2003 Vivid Vision was so easy because I'd done those before. I'd already built a few franchisors and we could reverse engineer it all right down to we signed Minneapolis was our 30th metro. Mm-hmm. No, Milwaukee was our 30th metro, and we signed it December 16th of 2003. So 14 days before the end of the year, we signed our 30th metro. Like everything, we chased down every sentence of that Vivid Vision. And then Brian handed me the 2006 Vivid Vision. He dropped it on my desk and he ran away and laughed. And the reason he ran away and laughed was to go from 2003, we'd done 60 million in revenue. 2006 was 100 million in revenue. He was like, I don't know how you're going to pull this one off. And then he ran away laughing. So I was never a part of building the vision.
Yeah.
And Brian was really never a part of figuring out the how. We just really understood our lanes that way. And we actually came out at 2006 at 106 million in revenue. So we were able to reverse engineer all aspects of things.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about now with the who, not how. That even if you're not inherently a visionary, that being able to go through this process, at least to create what it is that you really want without any limitations. And I should say, even if you do it and forget about it in a lot of cases. Do you want to talk about Andre Agassi? Because this is that's a really good thing of subconsciously how things can work, even if it's not your vivid vision.
I'm going to tell you, yes, I will tell you the Andre Agassi story. I want to tell you one of mine very briefly before I forget.
Okay.
My first vivid vision for my business of my group of companies that I wrote right after leaving 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I wrote down that by December 31st, 2010, I described my companies. And one of the things I said was that I own a home in Whistler. It's a family home where my kids and us hang out together. And on about December 5th of 2010, a friend of mine sent me a note. He said, congrats, you got the chalet. I said, how did you know about the chalet? He goes, dude, it's in your vivid vision. You've been sharing it with thousands of people. He goes, we've all been wondering which ones you're going to make happen.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
Amazing how you forget. Not only did I forget that it was in there in a way, but I forgot how many thousands of people I'd shared it with, because I share my vivid vision with everyone constantly. Mm-hmm. Right. So the Andre Agassi one, when Andre Agassi was married to Brooke Shields, Brooke didn't like her legs, and she had a picture of what she wanted her legs to look like up on the refrigerator. And the picture of the legs was actually a photo that she would look at every day, imagining what these perfect legs would look like. And Andre talks about this in his book, because the picture on the refrigerator was a photo of Steffi Graf. And and Andre Agassi got divorced from Brooke Shields and ended up marrying Steffi Graf. So the visualization worked. Unfortunately, it worked for Andre, not very well for Brooke.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's just so, our minds are amazing, that when you just plant that seed, that often your mind's going to go to work. Your subconscious doesn't know that this isn't possible, and it's going to get to work looking for, well, what do they say? Your eyes only see and your ears only hear what you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, and you said earlier, the conceive, believe, and achieve. That was one of the phrases that we had in one of our meeting rooms over the whiteboard. We named each of our meeting rooms, and the one that we called vision control, or our can you imagine room, was up above it, was conceive, believe, and achieve.
Mm-hmm. So I'm fortunate that I learned about visualization, you know, early on. I used to be an elite tennis player, and that was, you know, a big thing. And I learned from Rick Macy, who I was training at the Rick Macy Academy, and he's the, you know, he's a, I don't know how many time USDA coach of the year, coached Venus and Serena Williams and Andy Roddick and five number one tennis players. So he taught us this whole thing of visualizing exactly, like at night when you're, you know, he would always get us to, before you're going to bed in that twilight thing, or when you're there, just play perfect points in your mind, play your sequences, play the first, you know, imagine yourself hitting a perfect game where you're acing every serve, and just imagine that.
I played competitive tennis as a teenager as well, and was a part of a bit of a Russian military style program where they'd hand selected 25 of us and we had to play. And our tennis coach one time took us into the tennis center and turned the lights off. But we, in the service court, we put six tennis ball tins, almost like bowling pins.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he turned the lights off and we had to serve until we knocked over a tin in the fucking dark, man.
That's like, great.
Like, that's like, I'm trying to visualize where everything is. And and as soon as you knocked over the tins, which was probably half luck at 16 and half a little bit of visualization.
Right, right.
But he was trying to teach us that you can place things where you focus on.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
He was a sick mother.
So that's, you know, I think that going into this who, not how, era, you guys are a perfect example of that. That this really fits into what you are, what you're talking about. I don't know Brian that well. I know him and know he's an amazing visionary, but you would know whether he's a operator, you know, or whether that. So you look at it that you, even though you admit right in the beginning you didn't have the vision for, you didn't see what was there, but you were able to take that vision and make that happen, yeah, as Brian, an executor.
Brian is self-admittedly, and has written this in his books and in and on mm-hmm. stages, is a horrible operator.
Right.
And I am a horrible visionary. I am much better at reversing. So my core purpose is helping entrepreneurs make their dreams happen.
Yeah.
When I know what an entrepreneur's goals are, I can make those happen. Brian's amazing at being the cult leader mm-hmm. at stirring the Kool-Aid. He's amazing at being the chief energizing officer.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing at pointing people in the direction of vision. And he's really, really good at finding out where people may need mentoring or support. And then he's really good at like driving urgency. You know, mm-hmm. it's always a lot of like, and very good at like 80%, you know, minimum viable everything. Forget about minimum viable product, like minimum viable everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just momentum creates momentum and the flywheel, obsessing about the flywheel. So he's all good at that stuff. And he knows when to stay out of his lane, right? Whereas I was horrible at IT and finance. Brian had a better mind for details. In fact, the new COO at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I've been friends with Eric Church for 34 years. We started a fraternity together in Ottawa in 1989.
Wow.
Eric would have been horrible as a COO from a million to 100 million. Brian fired me at 107 million in the middle of 2007 because I was the wrong guy to go from 100 million to a billion.
Right.
Right. Wow. So even the who, not how guy there, pretty amazing that you know, you can see our energy together as friends today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, took a while to rebuild some of that, but I was the wrong guy to go from 100 million to the billion.
I think so much of this is self-awareness too, isn't it? I mean, having your vision for what you're in every category. You think about, what do you really want your life to look like? I look at the, you know, I talk about, I know I'm being successful when, as a kind of, I use that as a shortcut for the vision for what I want kind of thing for myself, even though I'm clear on the bigger picture of what they all mean. Having that self-awareness, I think, for what your perfect vision looks like, regardless of where the business is going. I think
for your perfect vision, and also for what you're really good at, and, you know, even if you get into the who, not how, it's really an understanding your own strengths and weaknesses. And the school system, frankly, messed up 95% of us in a serious way, right? If you're in the top 5% of students who did well in all of your classes, the school system was fine. But for the other 95%, for 27 out of every 30 kids in class, for 27 of those kids, school fucked us up forever.
Mm.
I went to school from kindergarten until fourth year university and basically had, you know, 16, 17 years of being told that I was a C student, that I would work hard, but I'd never do well at grades, that there were other people smarter than me. So I was emotionally getting destroyed in school.
Mm.
What the school system should have said to me was, wow, you're really good at these three areas. You suck at these seven. Don't worry about those seven. Let's get other people to do that stuff. Why don't you do this stuff? Right. And nowadays, I think in business, luckily as CEOs, we can delegate everything except genius. I think what hurts a lot of us is we're trying to get better at stuff. Like even Joe Polish told me that I had to be good at marketing. I said, no, I don't, Joe. I've had a number of debates with him on this.
Right.
I need to know the people that are good at marketing. And I need to share with them what my goals and my vision are, and they need to get me there. But I need to know the tactics exist.
Yeah.
I need to know that landing page optimization exists, but not how to do it. I need to know that spliss testing exists, but not how to do it. I need to know that copywriting exists, but not how to do it.
That's what
right? So then I know that all these things exist. Then I can find the who's.
That's it. That's who it is. That's what I was kind of trying to encourage people to stay in that what. You need to know what those things are, what's possible.
But 30 years ago, that was different, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we didn't have the internet and we didn't have the ability to network. So we had to be the smartest people in the room.
Yeah.
We had to be the best at all these things. Otherwise, we couldn't scale. But now we just have to know them.
This is what I say. There's never been a better time than right now that virtually every capability that you could imagine is commoditized. And I mean commoditized in the good sense of the word, in that it's available for sale, that you can buy and tap into as much or as little whenever you need it, any capability that you can imagine. And that's what's really, I think, as we're going into this migration, we've been calling the migration into Cloudlandia, this whole new digital world that we're living in, that the opportunities to collaborate, to even from a distance in groups, is like never before. So there's no need to have everybody in the same building or everybody from your town. You can have a global network of people all working independently and collectively towards your vision, as long as everybody's clear on what the vision is. That's a
and unfortunately that's what happens more often than not, is people aren't clear on the vision, so they don't really know how they fit with everything, right?
And it's funny you mentioned about our school kind of screwing us up, that I remember, you know, I've talked about my report card, my amalgam kind of comment of everything. My mom passed away about 5 or 6 years ago now, and I found all my old report cards. And I was looking back at them, and I found one from third grade, and the handwritten comment in the things was, "Dean is able to achieve excellent results with what seems like little effort. Imagine if he applied himself."
All the time.
Imagine if he applied himself.
Right.
And you think, like, that's screwing you up, that somehow it's like, able to, that's been my winning formula for all through life, is achieving excellent results with what seems like little effort.
Dude, nine word emails.
Are you exactly.
I just sent one out today to my entire list, another 9 word email about we're running an in-person COO Alliance event, which no entrepreneurs are allowed to come. It's only second commands. And it's all about building a world-class culture, which I'm like known for globally. I'm like, I'm not going to write a long form email. It's just like, I sent a very brief email. If you're interested, let's get on a call and talk about it. Yeah. And we're getting hit with all these responses.
Of course. So great. Yeah. I love that. But that's, it's kind of like, it shames you into, like, I realize now looking back that a lot of those things, that's kind of a workaround. I've been ADD from the beginning and have always found shortcuts because of my inability to get myself to focus for a long period of time or to put in that kind of effort.
Can I speak about ADD for a second?
Yeah, of course.
I was in a clubhouse room this morning speaking about ADD and bipolar disorder. So I have 17 of the 18 signs of attention deficit disorder clinically diagnosed. Mm-hmm. My ex said that if I was paying attention during the testing, it would have been 18 for 18. She's probably right.
Drifted off of that one question.
And I have 10 or 11 of the 11 signs of bipolar disorder clinically diagnosed. I'm not medicated for either. ADD is a superpower for an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Now, not if you want to be a lawyer or an engineer or a doctor or a teacher. But for an entrepreneur, ADD is not a disorder. It's attention disbursement, which allows you to see everything.
Yeah.
So it allows you to see what's happening with your market, the customers, your suppliers, the pulse, the energy. You see metrics, you see stuff jumping off of websites at you, you see like patterns, but you get so distracted because of all the things you're seeing that you have to delegate them quickly. Mm-hmm. Shit, that's called being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was so myopically focused on one thing, I'd miss all the other things happening. On the bipolar disorder, mania is why people follow us. By the way, bipolar disorder has been nicknamed by the medical community as the CEO disease. Wow. Most entrepreneurial CEOs are bipolar.
Wow.
3% of the population are bipolar. 3% of the population are entrepreneurs. Maybe there's actually a correlation there.
Wow.
So the mania is why people will quit their job and come and join us. The mania is why we'll make a big investment or buy something or buy a franchise or join something early. The mania is why people will, follow our direction and join our pep rally and say, hell yeah, we'll go sell something we haven't quite figured out. The stress and depression is simply us course correcting because we're under so much pressure and we haven't necessarily told all of our friends that we're on the edge of bankruptcy, or we're not quite sure how we're going to meet payroll, but I'm recruiting that senior person to come and work for me anyway. Like, that's an inordinate amount of, and then we've got our house on the line and we're not drawing a salary, but we're telling our spouse we're successful. And we've got our entire identity wrapped up in a brand. That's where the stress and depression comes from. And we feel guilty for unplugging. So I think the key is to understand how to leverage those two skills of being an ADD and an entrepreneur and bipolar, and then how to protect yourself from being on the lunatic fringe of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're off topic, but
no, but I mean, that's, but it all comes down to, I discovered that what I find is often when I'm unable to focus on things, that it's often, I had this conversation with Ned Hollowell, that it feels like what I really have sometimes is an intention deficit, that I'm unclear on what I should be doing in this particular moment. Because the only times being ADD really causes an issue for me is in indecision on what to do with this block of time that I have right now, where you've got so many options for things that I could do, so many things that you've got going on, that I'm unable to get my brain into gear on this one thing. And that's why I work up all these workarounds. My 50-minute focus finder is that.
So that's for me. Let me explain how I visualize a company. Mm-hmm. First off is I visualize every company. I'll show you this. I visualize every company like a jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I can share my screen here. Tell me if you can share this.
Can you see
this?
I can give you permission. Yeah. There we go.
Okay. So I see every company like a jigsaw puzzle, and the four corners of the jigsaw puzzle are your vivid vision, your core purpose, your core values, and your BHAG. And then I see the four sides of the jigsaw puzzle as being all the people systems. So the recruiting, interviewing, selection, training, onboarding, leadership development of people, which ties into a course that I'm launching next month around growing your leaders. And then the strategic thinking systems around strategy and goal setting and planning. And then all of your meeting rhythms, which tie into your annual meetings, quarterly meetings, financial review meetings, one-on-one coaching meetings, daily huddles, et cetera. And then your financial systems. Your culture emerges from the alignment of all of that with your people. So for me, I flip the org chart upside down, where I have the CEO at the bottom supporting the leaders, who are supporting the frontline staff, who are supporting the customers. Everyone can see the vivid vision, and you build your business inside your core purpose and your core values. Mm. So if I think about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, we have the C-level team supporting the managers, who are supporting the employees, who are supporting the franchise partners, who are supporting the customers. We all saw the vivid vision. We lived our core values, and we understood our core purpose.
That's so great.
And then you break down that vivid vision into your annual goals, your quarterly goals. Right. For me, my goals are employee net promoter score first, customer net promoter score second, profit goal third, and revenue goal fourth. Mm-hmm. If my employees are super engaged and happy, they're going to take care of my customers. Mm-hmm. If my customers are super engaged and happy, then the profit comes and the revenue comes. But if we're always talking about the customer, then the employees feel second rate. If we're always talking about revenue, the employees feel second rate. But if we obsess over our employees, everything is easy.
Yeah. This is amazing. So like that whole, you could see, anybody can imagine the immense value in going away to creative place, spending some time thinking about that. How long do you encourage people to dedicate for this? Like to give themselves that process?
The vivid vision process?
Yeah.
So let's say that you're writing a vivid vision for your business. Mm-hmm. The first step is you got to get out of your box. You can't sit in your office and write this thing because right. You get distracted by how. Mm-hmm. Right? You get distracted, and you get distracted by who as well. Mm-hmm. You need to get away from your laptop. No technology, no iPhone, no iPad, no nothing. You take a good old-fashioned notepad and a couple of pens in case one runs out. You put your earbuds in, and you go somewhere where you're inspired, somewhere around nature. Mm-hmm. You go near the ocean. You hang out in the mountains. If it's wintertime, I'll go to a big chalet and I'll hang out somewhere with a beautiful view of the mountains. And I start doing a mind map. And I mind map my company almost as if I hopped into a time machine. Mm-hmm. Let's say that, like, you know, the Doc and Michael J. Fox, and we hop into the DeLorean and we travel out to December 31st, 2023. Yeah. And we get out of the time machine and we look around and we're like, shit, I'm in my company three. And then you describe what you see.
Yeah.
You don't know how it happened in 3 years. You just describe it in its finished state.
Yeah.
So I want you to describe every area of your org chart. Describe operations, describe IT, describe finance, describe marketing, describe customer service. You talk about what your customers are saying about you. You talk about what your employees are saying about you. Yeah. You describe what your employees are writing on Indeed and Glassdoor. You talk about your culture and the buzz and the fun activities and your reward systems and your leadership team meetings. and you put three or four bullet points around every single aspect of your business that you can think about. You describe what the media is writing about you, and you end up with a whole bunch of points on these mind maps. That might take 2 3 to 4 hour sessions. That's it. Just enough to get out. And again, you're not worrying about how, and you're not worrying about who.
Yeah.
And then you organize all your rough points into a rough draft, like a 3-page Word document where they're all organized into rough points. Mm-hmm. And then what I would suggest you do, I don't know if Jennifer's on our call today, but Jennifer Houdet, who's been a Genius Network member for 5 years, Jennifer and her team have written 250 vivid visions for clients of mine and of theirs from all over the world. They'll take the rough draft and they'll ask you more questions and pull ideas out of your mind. And they'll literally make their vivid vision come to reality. Jennifer and her team have done a spectacular job at polishing it. And then you add design elements to it to really make it pop off the page.
Yeah.
So that's the starting point, is get away from the office, do your mind mapping, do your rough draft, and then get it to a copywriter.
That's amazing. And then I think this is where a nice transition then is, let's say that this is, you're a solo operator right now, that you're just starting out, you're running a business that you've got a vision like this, but it's going to require who's. And so I sense right now what's happening is that people are very excited about this idea of who, not how. They're like, wow, that sounds amazing, that I can focus on what I want to do, but I'm going to need who's. And then the immediate next question that comes up is, well, how do I find a who? How do I who? So I think that's an interesting, I joked with Dan the other day, we need to write a manual called How to Who. That's kind of how to who, the last how you'll ever need to master.
I love that.
That's really what it is. The only one how you need to know is how to who.
Well, the first part of that is to remember that it needs to get done, but not by you.
Yes.
Right. So when you realize it needs to get done, but not by me, mm-hmm. I used to coach a woman, Suzanne Evans, that had a huge coaching program. So she coached about 600 women entrepreneurs, and I was coaching her on building her business. And Suzanne said that every Sunday she would sit down and set her goals for the week and make a list of all the core projects that she needed to do for the week. Then she would think about how many hours every project would take.
Yes.
And then she would delegate 80% of the hours before she allowed herself to check an email or start on a project.
Wow.
That was fucking brilliant. Like, she delegated 80% of her work every week.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I would start with the how is, again, very clear objective on what the finished product looks and feels like. What does the project look like when it's completed? Mm-hmm. How much time and money do I want to spend on that? Almost like you're doing a creative brief for an ad, right? If you can describe the project on a post-it note in enough clarity, then you can turn to your network and figure out who's done this.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think most entrepreneurs get sloppy is they take the very first referral that comes along. Mm-hmm. And it's not that referrals are bad, but it's sometime that we're all so hardwired as humans wanting to help everybody that we refer the first person that comes to us, even though we've never used them or we're not quite sure, but we want to help. So we want to give a referral. If you're hiring a human, you do a lot of interviews to hire the person. If you're going to spend $100,000 on an ad campaign, you do a lot of thoughts about what the budget's going to be and what the results are going to be. If you're going to hire a who to do a project, please talk to 2 or 3 of their former customers and ask the tough questions. Please make sure they're clear on what you're doing. Please interview them for core values and how they respond to you as an org. Like, treat it like you're spending $100,000 on a marketing campaign or hiring somebody. Don't get sloppy at hiring your who's.
That's abdication, right? Like, jumping in, just thinking, oh, finally, yeah, you'll do. Yeah, you'll be my who. Yeah, that's really something.
Well, it's interesting. I turned to Joe about a year ago and I said, do you know anybody who's doing, and I won't say the area, who's doing X, Y, Z? And he goes, yeah, we've got this person who's doing stuff. I'm like, how long have you been working with them? And he goes, actually, yeah, just about 6 weeks. He goes, give me 6 months and I'll let you know how they're doing. I'm like, perfect. Because Joe really wanted to help him make the intro, but he didn't have enough data to know whether the guy was really good or not.
Right.
Right. For Jennifer, like, as an example, for me with Jennifer, I was hopeful 5 years ago that she could write vivid visions because I was trying to find a writer who could help me get some of these done. And then she did a couple and she was good. And then she did a few more and she was great. And then she did a few more and she was world class. And now she and her team, no kidding, have done more than 250 finished Vivid Visions for companies.
Well, they may have done more Vivid Visions than anybody in the world.
I mean, for sure. By a landslide.
Yeah. So that's great. And that's the kind of thing, that's what I mean about commoditized now, is that the ability for you to get all of that experience at the opportunity.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. You know, you look at these, you know, putting it out in your network, and that's part of the real value of being a part of something like Genius Network, where you've got this, we've got so many different people in so many different areas that always were one degree of separation from usually the best people in the world at anything.
Exactly. But again, I think my call, and Dean, the who, not how, like your concept that then Dan and Ben Hardy wrote the book about,
yeah,
you're brilliant for coming up with the idea. I haven't read the book yet, but I hope the book talks about making sure that you are hiring the right who, you know, that don't get lazy with that stuff, man. Mm-hmm. I had a CEO that I was coaching years ago. He's gone from 40 people up to 700 in the years I was coaching him. Mm-hmm. And at one point he said, you know, it takes about 90 days after I hire someone to know if they're the right fit. Mm-hmm. I said, that's because your company sucks at interviewing. Mm-hmm. If you're really good at interviewing, you know everything about the person before they join you.
Yeah.
Like even Michelle, who you know, bought a franchise for 1-800-GOT-JUNK, she had to go through two very tough interviews to be awarded a franchise. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she was showing up feeling like she was going to get sold all day. And yeah, those were probably two of the hardest interviews she's been through.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to know everything about the person, because we built the business and we didn't want to hurt the brand by hiring somebody that would hurt us. Mm-hmm. But when you hire the right people, then it explodes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole thing. And I think that the, not thinking about your vivid vision as like this one thing that you only do this, you only need this skill set once every 3 years to do it. Because I think that the principles of what you're talking about work for any directive that you're giving to anybody. Having a vivid vision for the directive that you give to a who to describe the what that you're hoping they're going to bring the how to complete.
Well, and it's a lot easier to get your who's.
Yeah.
When you share your vivid vision, they want to help you make that come true. Your company is more exciting.
Yes.
Right. When I share the vivid vision for what the COO Alliance looks like, acts like, and feels like in 3 years, it's a lot more exciting and inspiring for people to be a want of part of either joining or building that, because they're mm-hmm. excited about the future much more so than they're excited. Like, even though the current state is really good, the mm-hmm. future is so exciting that everyone wants to be a part of making that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, this whole, I think that, you know, the idea of creating different vivid visions for all the different areas for yourself. Like, I think people starting with yourself, even if it's not organizationally, starting with your vivid vision for Ooh. What you want for your life, so that you know that your organization that you're going to build is going to be complementary to the life that you want. So yeah. many times I see people go down the wrong road and they end up with a business that they got the vision that they wanted for the business, but it sucks for the life that they wanted.
Well, they didn't think about the life they wanted. Yeah. So I'll give you a few examples of personal yeah. vivid visions and how they lock and load. What first is, I'll actually share with you my personal vision for what I look like, feel like, and act like in 3 years. Patty Ann, you'll enjoy reading this because you and I have done. Patty Ann did 52 calls with me as a therapist, helping me get through my divorce. And wow. was extraordinarily powerful. She's also done work for about 6 of my clients as the CEO and COO in helping them strengthen relationships. She's yeah. literally world-class in that space. So, Patty, I'd love for you to read this now and see how I'm doing towards what you saw me at, you know, 3 years ago when I was falling apart. But, Dean, so I'll walk you through this. The best example, or one of the best examples I've seen of a personal vivid vision was Brian.
Hmm.
In 2004. I've known Brian by that point for 10 years. He was my best man at my first wedding, probably 3 months before I joined him. He was my best man at my wedding. Okay. By the way, there's somebody else on this call. Where's Saida? Saida Dislitz, who's on this call right now. There she is. Saida and I met the same year that Brian and I learned the Vivid Vision process back in 1998.
Wow.
So pretty crazy that she's seen me 22 years later, seen me grow companies, seen Brian.
Wow.
So that's how long we've known each other is for 22 years. So Brian in 2004 was getting a divorce. And I had known Brian for years. And he won't have a problem with me telling the story, but his ex had a miscarriage. And then he stayed, and then she had another miscarriage, and he stayed, and she had 7 miscarriages over a period of a few years. And I went, Brian, like, stop having sex. Like, if you're trying to leave, stop having sex. Anyway, he finally gets up the courage to leave the marriage, and he finds out his wife is pregnant again, but she's now at term. And he writes a letter to his wife, like, he's going to be getting divorced. She hates him at the time. They're very, very, very good friends today, but she hated him at the time. And he wrote a 2-page personal vivid vision of what their relationship would be like post-divorce. Wow. Going on vacations together, being friends together, having dinners with each other, celebrating events, like stuff that she is like, you are a fucking madman for even writing this down. Like, you are a lunatic for thinking this. Lisa and Brian are such close personal friends. Lisa's new husband, Dan, built Brian's house. They go on vacations together. They've like co-raised kids together. They have an incredible, extraordinary relationship together because he was so strong on what the vision for this would look like. And he shared it with her. He shared it with his friends. He reread it. He focused on it. And when you conceive, believe, and achieve. And it's really powerful on that. On the marriage side of things, or let's say you're a family, whether you're a traditional relationship or a new relationship, 2 people raising kids together. Mm-hmm. Why don't you get both of you to go off site for a half a day and describe what your family unit looks like. Mm. What are your friends like? What's your faith like? What's your sexual preference? Like, what are you doing for activities? What are you doing for finance? How do you co-raise the family? How do you have pink jobs and blue jobs? Both of you describe what it looks like and then come back and merge that together and have a joint family vivid vision that finally gets both partners on the same page so that you're both building towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really powerful stuff.
That sounds exciting. I think a lot of people would be scared that they would have completely different visions.
Well,
if
you do have vivid visions that are different, wouldn't you rather know that now versus Absolutely. 3 years later? It's very similar to having co-owners of a business. So I used to coach a group called Nurse Next Door in Vancouver, and I got Ken and John both to describe the vivid visions for their companies. And before they'd started franchising, before they were doing anything, then they merged their vivid visions together. And there were parts they disagreed on. So they just kept them out. But all the stuff they agreed on became the real locked and loaded vivid vision for the company, which then they shared with the board. And then we started franchising. And then they shared with the employees. And sure enough, you know, they're this massive home healthcare company now.
Oh, this is awesome. You know, do you mind? Let's get some people involved here. You see, take some temperature, see if we got some questions or comments or uh-ohs or ahs. Let's start with Andrew, and then we'll go to Patty Ann. And then it looks like Ben's got a question too. So let's start with that.
Cool. So Cameron, what I'd love for you to do is to share, and you answered it a little bit in talking about your vivid vision, but I'm down with the concept of the who. The issue that I have is transferring the vision with clarity to make sure that I get the right who. So would it be your statement, without putting words in your mouth, that vivid vision is kind of the magic that makes that happen? Or are there any kind of ninja tricks you got with that from experience?
Yeah, partially. So the vivid vision will help you attract the right who's, but then you need to actually, well, funny enough, you need to read the book Who, and read chapter 2 of the book Double Double to learn how to interview and select people so that you're bringing the right people in. Because you can attract lots of great people, but you need to attract the right ones. So let's say that I was doing a job posting for an affiliate manager, right? I'm going to bring an affiliate manager on for the CO Alliance. I want to attract, and I describe the role. I get Amber Spears to proofread my copy because she's the best in the world at affiliate management. I have this amazing job posting for an affiliate manager, and I post it, and I get all these resumes, and I get 200 resumes. I don't read any of them. Every single resume that comes in, I email them back automatically, and it says, thanks very much for your resume. please read the vivid vision of what the COO Alliance looks like, acts like, and feels like in 3 years, and read this recent article of us in the media. If this sounds like the kind of company you want to help grow, reply now and put interview me in the subject line and send me a video for how you think you can make the vivid vision come true. I will only watch the videos of the people that put interview me in the subject line. So if they send me a video and they don't put interview me, I don't want them because I need people that are detail oriented. So I've done two screenings. One, they can't put interview me and I don't want them. Secondly, I'm only going to look at the resumes of the video. So now I'll watch the videos. If they feel like the cultural people I want to work with, then I'll read their resumes to see if they have the apparent skills to do what I need them to do. And then I'm going to interview to see if they've done stuff before, not that they know how to do it. Right? The world is littered with people that have lots of education and know how to do something, but they haven't done it. And I want to hire people that have done the stuff before, not the people that know how to do it before.
You know, when I think back of that, the double-double was the first introduction I had to you, actually, years ago. What year did you write that?
I wrote it in 2010.
Okay.
And then you probably, you may have seen it before or as I was joining the network 6 years ago.
I think I saw it before when it first came out. Yannick Silver.
Oh, yeah. I used to coach Yannick. I got to tell you a funny story about Yannick Silver.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss was at my home for the weekend with his brother, Tom. And I've known Tim for years and they were hanging out with me in Vancouver. And Tim's like, he was asking me about what I was doing with my business. And I was explaining the vivid vision. He goes, "You're like Yannick Silver." And I'm like, "What is that, like a car? Is it like a Pontiac?" Ah. Like, "What's a Yannick Silver?"
Yeah.
And he told me, and I ran into my office, and from the day before, the Globe and Mail, and I'll find the article to send to you, the Globe and Mail had a full-page article in the front of the business section. I was the photo of me in the hammock from when I was writing my vivid vision.
Yeah.
And it was an article about Yannick Silver and I. So Tim phoned Yannick, introduced me to Yannick, and that's how I ended up coaching Yannick. Yannick introduced me to Joe.
Yannick
was my first,
That's the thing, That's it. So 2010, that was all my way back then, I guess. Amazing. Very cool. But that's, you know, there
it was
you go.
It was before that, because I took Tim to his first Burning Man in 2008. It was probably 2007.
Okay.
So I met Yannick before Double Double, but that's how you heard about me, was through Yannick.
That's right, through Yannick. He was starting to coach with you. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, amazing. What a small world, but that is so great, you know, as you start to think about that. But your books, your the suite of them, kind of starting with that double-double to plant the idea of what's even possible, the vivid vision for how to create your vivid vision to make it happen, then meetings suck. That's as people start sharing all of the directives and start sharing, working together to get all these things accomplished, is amazing. And now free PR. What a suite. Very exciting.
Well, and then we did the Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs that I co-authored with Hal Elrod. And that was because of the Genius Network. I was actually in the lobby area on the second floor near where a bunch of Tim's paintings hang. Uh-huh. And Hal kind of grabbed me and said, "Hey, do you want to co-author the Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs book?" And
that's his love language. That's Hal's love language, is let's write a book.
Exactly. So I was like, because he was the right who to partner with, right?
Yeah.
He had a good brand and it was exploding. And so we have the second best-selling book in his series is the Entrepreneurs version.
That's so great. Yeah. I love it. Cool. Let's look at another question here, Timothy. Who's next up? Did we say Patty?
Patty is next up. Patty M.
Hi, everybody. Cameron, this is so great having you here. So I don't really have a question as much as a comment and an add-on, since you said you wanted my thoughts.
Yeah.
So what you're saying about imagine you do with couples, well, I do that and you should do that, because when you work with couples, you realize they say, well, we don't have the same vision of how we want to live our lives. I'm like, and did you ever talk about this before you got married? No. So you can preempt that problem. Part of that discussion also has to be money. And now let's combine it with the business relationship work I do. Same conversation with the CEO and the COO, except it has to be the CEO has to have clearly articulated his strategic vision, and the COO has to clearly understand it and be totally on board that he's going to execute it. So it's the same as you, it's the same skill set. It's different platforms, and then the who, not the how. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly the same stuff, at least from where I see it. You agree, Cameron?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So I love it.
That's great. Thank you. All right, let's see. Let's go to Stefan Spencer.
I learned something from Amy Africa some years ago that changed how I see ADD or being scattered or whatever. And it's been really helpful. And I'd love to hear your take on this. So they were back in the days of hunters and gatherers in prehistoric times, also the spotters. And the spotters kept the tribe alive because the spotters would be able to sense that the herd was on the move or that a neighboring tribe might be coming to attack before anybody else would notice. So I feel like I can relate to that and be not a hunter or gatherer, but a spotter who can see things before everybody else sees them and seize the opportunities therefore. And that's just been a game changer for me. I'm curious, have you heard of this concept of spotters? Do you think this, I don't know, I'd just love to hear what your thoughts are on this.
No, I haven't, but I think that is just the hyper awareness that ADD provides us, where again, it's not a disorder, it's a superpower because we see everything that's happening. So we see the trends, we hear stuff from our customers, we see patterns with emails, like we spot things that are happening before other people do, because other people are so focused on something, they're just not uber aware of it all. Like I'm very aware of the time of people that I'm chatting with privately, of you know, marketing opportunities that I have that I got to work on, of a call that I'm doing this afternoon, of making sure I come back to the Vivid Vision, of saying hi to friends on the call. Like I'm uber aware of stuff. And I think that's the same as what you're talking about, Stefan. You know, you're one of the world experts at SEO. You're good at noticing the patterns and the things that all drive towards certain themes. But yeah, I think the spotters in business are probably, many of us as entrepreneurs are those things, right? The key is then to decide which of those opportunities are going to give us the highest ROI. Because if we only have three inputs, if we have people, we have time, and we have money, what's the highest output or ROI we're going to get off those three things? You know, we could sell our business and put our people, time, and money into building a chain of pizza restaurants, and it might be a better ROI than what we're doing now, right? Or we could pick a certain project that'll give us a better ROI. So the key is to spot all the opportunities and then to be able to filter them in a way that I think gives us the highest ROI or launches some things so that we get some initiatives into orbit so they're always working on us, which is like SEO is a big one, right? Getting a lot of press coverage. For me, the biggest way for me to drive my SEO has been all the press coverage I get about me. Because all of the links back to my website have become massive for me.
Okay, let's see. Dean Anthony. We got Dean Anthony. Let's see if we can unmute.
Okay, hey. Hey, thanks, Dean. Good name, by the way. And thanks, yes. Cameron. So definitely identify with the ADHD and the newest shiny object. So my question, Cameron and Dean, is knowing... how do you, I understand the ROI for the choosing. Where do you find the who? How do you attract the who?
Well, the easiest way to first attract the who's is to make sure that your brand is really strong, right? So your website has to be really strong and look and feel like, so just ask yourself, if Richard Branson bought your company, what would he do with your website? Or if Apple owned your company, like, are you attracting people in? Are you pushing them away? And then your current employees, are they A's and B's that are high vibrant rating, high frequency, sharing stuff on social media? You know, are your employees attracting people into your brand or are they pushing people away? Do you have a strong Vivid Vision that you can attract people in? Do you pay at the 85th percentile or greater? Right? It's like I pay my people more than other people will pay them. Because I know, and I even pay some of my trade, like people that I'll outsource to will come to me and they'll say, oh, I need like, you know, $8,000 for this. I'm like, no, $8,000 doesn't work for me. And they're like, oh no, really? I'm like, no, it's gotta be 10 or nothing. And they're like, wait, what? Because I know if I pay them a tiny little bit more, they're going to go through brick walls for me.
Yeah.
So paying the right amount, treating people with respect, delivering core values, you know, living your core values, praise, like it's all that stuff that attracts who's in.
Okay. So what if it's a startup? And last question is, how did you write all these books process wise? I know that's two questions and I'll end it there.
Well, so so I'm an advisor and an investor in Scribe, which used to be called Book in the Box. So Tucker Max, I coach Tucker and Zach, two of their COOs have been a member of the COO Alliance. So I really helped Scribe scale their company. I'm their single largest referral source of clients. Lewis House is number two. I'm number one. They helped me write three of my books. They helped me write Meeting Suck, Vivid Vision, and Free PR. If anybody wants an introduction to them, because I'm an advisor, I can kind of get you into the hands of the right people. If you email me, I can get you that intro and they can help you. Meeting Suck for me, because I already had domain expertise and I had speaking events about meeting and I had some content written. They just asked me 8 hours of questions over five meetings. And they kept asking me more questions and we recorded it all and they transcribed it all. And they then helped frame it all and pull it all together. But it's 1,000% my content, but I can't sit and write stuff. My first book, Double Double, I actually walked around my home and audio recorded it using Dragon Dictation, mm-hmm. and then had a transcription person in Sweden who did all the editing for me. And then I got David Hauser, the CEO of Grasshopper. His wife was an editor. She did my editing for me. So I just found the house. And then with Book in a Box or with Scribe, it was just easier to get them to do it all for me. And
that's so great. This whole, everything I talk about with this cow, the problem that entrepreneurs run into is trying to be a self-milking cow, where they're trying to make the milk, the ideas, the vision, that's really all part of milk, but they're trying to then milk themselves and package it and take it to market and sweep up around the shop and send out the invoices and all that stuff. And, you know, job number one is to realize, identify in your role, what is the milk? The thing that only you can do in your organization or with your vision there, and seek to find who's to support you in that for the vision for, first of all, your life, for what you want to contribute. I joke about the creating content like that. I don't write either. I don't do anything in my organization that requires opposable thumbs. So I'm looking that the thing that I'm doing is I discovered, just like you did, Cameron, that the fastest bandwidth way to get ideas out of your head in an analog format into digital is through your mouth. That's the fastest bandwidth way to record it. Because as soon as you record it, now it's intellectual property. It's not just an idea that's ethereal and goes away. It's intellectual property now that you can take that take the audio, get a transcript, get an editor, turn that into a big book, turn it into a lead getting book, whatever needs, emails, blog posts, whatever needs to be written for your business. I've started calling it the Moo method.
Nice.
Multiplied oral output.
Well, so I'll give you a very specific step-by-step of what I'm doing. So Mindvalley has just hired me to film a course for them on Vivid Vision. Yeah. So they have an 8-person film crew coming here next week to film, which is a little bit overwhelming. But it's 2 days of filming just on the Vivid Vision concept. Mm-hmm. So I had to think about what's the end result that I want people leaving with understanding the Vivid Vision. So it's understanding what it is, and how to use one in business, and how to use one personally, and how to use one with family. So if that's the end, then they need to know, where did I learn about the concept, and how do they write one, and who should write it, and how do they get started writing it, and how do they get partway through writing it, and how do they get a final copy, and why would they use a copywriter, and why would they use a designer? And then once they've got one, what do they do with it? How do they roll it out internally to the leadership team, and how do they write it internally to their employees, and how do they share it with shareholders and suppliers and customers, and how do they reinforce it? And then how do they build a reverse engineering plan off of it? So that became all of my, that became kind of the table of contents for my Vivid Vision course. And then I literally walked around with my phone and used Otter and recorded me thinking out loud about each of those sections.
I love it.
And I just wandered around talking it all until I ended up with all the content. And then from all that content, I pulled all the content together into a rough draft. And then I organized the rough draft into bullet points because I'm going to be reading it off a teleprompter. And then I just went through and I was like, oh, this section's really light. I need to add to it. Oop, I doubled this done. I can edit it. And now I've got, I literally have a 38-page document that's done, ready for teleprompter.
Everything, yeah.
That's all me, all my content.
Yeah.
So I start with the end, then I reverse engineer the table of contents, and then I do the copy. And that I could then, if I didn't already have a book on Vivid Vision, I could take that and hand that to Scribe, and they would then ask me lots of questions and pull it all together and really make it pop off the page.
That's so great. Yeah, being able to create content and having access to those kind of who's is an amazing resource, you know, that's available.
That's why we're in this group, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to be the smartest person in the room. We have to be in the right room. Like, I'm constantly turning to other people in the room for ways to actually learn on how to scale my company.
Mm-hmm. I love
it. By the way, a shout out to Alana Winter, who I just saw pop up in here. Alana and I were part of a film critic group that we pulled together for fun during COVID, and we went 10 weeks watching movies. And she told me about one of my favorite movies of all time was The Big Chill. And yeah. I've watched it, you know, 40 times. And she said, have you watched the movie, The Return of the Sea Caucus 7. The Return of the Sea Caucus 7. I'm like, no. And so I looked it up and I started watching it last night. And now I'm obsessed with this new movie because it looks like The Big Chill literally copied it and did Yeah. You got to watch. If you like The Big Chill, watch Return of the Sea Caucus 7.
Which one came first?
Yeah, it totally came first. And I think it's better. So that was, by the way, a random ADD moment brought to you by Cameron and Alana.
Yeah, thank you. There you go. Which I'm going to add to that because we just watched the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, nice.
So great. Anyway, let's go one more question. Let's, who was the...
Alana's got her hand up, actually.
Okay, then let's do Alana. Hello, Alana. It's been a long time. I've seen your smiling face. There you are.
Two of my favorite people. Actually, you know, Karen, I think it's funny because I tie that into what you're talking about with content. This year, content creation is my to-do for the entire of next week. But I think it's to do with content. That was a small movie that was put out. They put out, and I like it way better too. But the content was copied by somebody with just a bigger budget, and he never even acknowledged that movie. And it's scene by scene.
Is that right? Wow.
Oh, and it is. They literally ripped off and duplicated. But yeah, it is. It's crazy how they took. Yeah, you have to. I agree, Alana. There's
something on Netflix. There.
Like Dean, I'll go to other people's landing pages, and I won't copy the copy.
Yeah,
but I'll kind of follow the way that some of the best landing page people have done theirs, and I'll just insert my copy for theirs, but I'll use the format and their layouts.
Yeah, which is great, and that's the intention of you know, that's smart, that's learning, getting inspired by something. But it's like you said, it's very different to then taking somebody's exact thing and just filling in the blanks, like putting your name in where their copy is. Is this, everybody's crazy to know about this movie now. Is this on Netflix or
It's on Amazon Prime, and it's also on Apple TV or Apple Movies, whatever they're called.
Okay.
I just put it into the comments as well.
All right. I love it.
Seven.
There we go. Well, Cameron, what's your final word here? Tie a bow on all of this.
None of this fucking matters.
It's all made up and the points don't matter.
It's really true.
Like, I've been telling people this for a few years now. None of this actually matters. We're all going to die. Like, let's have fun along the way and laugh a little bit and enjoy the journey and hang out with our friends and follow our passions, because all of this is just bullshit that we do to make money.
Maybe the hokey pokey really is what it's all about.
Dean, when I hang out with Dean, I really don't want to hang out with Dean and learn about landing pages. I want to talk to you about your tennis stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't really care about Tim and all of the stuff you've done in direct marketing. I want to hear about your art and how you got into painting. And Stefan, I don't really care about I want to know what it's like living in Israel. And, you know, that's the big lesson I've got for everybody is none of this shit actually matters. Part two would be, every single one of our employees is struggling with something deeply personal today.
Mm.
And every single one of us is struggling with something in the human condition. And if we can remember that and connect with people on a human level and care about them, they'll care about our companies.
Hmm. That's amazing. It's so great. And think big, right? I guess that's the thing. It doesn't cost any more to have a big vision. I mean, you look at people right now.
I'll give you the biggest example of the big vision that I've ever connected with. In January of 1995, okay, in September of 1993, Kimball Musk worked for me. I hired Kimball to work for me at College Pro Painters, Elon's brother, and his cousin, Peter Reeve, who built SolarCity, also worked for me at College Pro Painters. Hmm. In January of 1995, I was asked to be a reference, a business reference for Kimball and Elon in their very first round of funding for their first company called Zip2. They had one employee and they were only raising $600,000. And Elon had to explain the vision of the business. And when he explained the vision of the business, I didn't even understand what the internet was. And they were trying to explain an internet mapping company, but his vision was so big that it was exciting and inspiring that they were able to raise money partially on the vision and partially on Kimball's operational experience. But that for me showed, and I've known Elon for 25 years. I've watched him when he acquired Tesla, when he took over PayPal with Peter Thiel, when he started SpaceX, when he bought SolarCity from his cousins. His ability to dream at a level that we can't dream at,
yeah,
inspires everyone.
And he lives like a guy that definitely believes that it doesn't matter because we're all going to die.
He gives no fucks. I was talking to my kids about this the other day. He thinks we're in a virtual reality game.
It's a simulation, right? Yeah. And he lives his life like that. I think that's amazing. But you look at the, even on the Tesla website, their secret master plan is so like a truncated version of probably what their vivid vision was that he set in place in 2006 or whatever it was, you know? So
yeah, exactly. He bought Tesla from the two founders and took it over. They already had the Roadster in place.
Oh, wow.
And then he decided to not make the two-seater Roadster, which was like a Lotus Esprit. It was like this little turbo. He didn't want to just make that better. He redesigned the whole vision so that it would be fit him because he's 6'5". So the Tesla Model S had to fit his body size. It had to, you know why it has the 7-seat option? So in the trunk, it's because he had five boys.
Yeah, right.
So if he's going to build a car, it has to fit him and it has to fit his five kids.
Yeah.
It had to be really fast because he had a McLaren F1 at the time. So he had the $1.4 million like vehicle that the Tesla had to be just as fast as that one.
Yeah.
So he just built a car company for himself. And then he's like, but if I'm going to do this, he just built a dream so big that other people were like, fuck yeah, let's do it. They didn't want to make the Prius a little bit cooler.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Cameron, this has been amazing. I always love talking with you. It's kind of, this is great. I really appreciate you being able to come on and join us. Tim, you want to, any wrapping up things for us?
Just a formal wrap up in a second, but thanks to both of you on behalf of the hundreds of people who have been here. You see the chat alive with compliments and it could be life-changing for people. So thank you very much. I think that Joe Polish would be very proud of both of you. What do you think?
Well, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I had to bring Joe Polish. I had to bring Joe Polish into this conversation somewhere. But anyway, thank you. So a formal conclusion. Wouldn't you agree, everyone, that this I Love Marketing session with Cameron Harold and Dean Jackson was absolutely phenomenal. Don't miss a future episode by subscribing today. You need to go do it today. Go to ilovemarketing.com/subscribe.
If you'd like access to the show notes or resources to help you take action on what was discussed, please visit ilovemarketing.com/391.